The Crude Life with host Jason Spiess.
Dr. Lauren C. Scott on the line with us here. He's with Lauren C. Scott and Associates, a consulting firm out of Louisiana. Of course, he also does some economic work for Louisiana State University. Professor Emeritus, is that how we pronounce it?
That's right. Emeritus is an old Latin phrase that means small interior office.
Ah, I see. I see. I thought it was Latin for place to hang hat. I wasn't sure. So, well, let's talk about the economic outlook for Louisiana in just a moment here. I know you are a part of that, but hey, lots going on in the last week in oil and gas. You know, we've got the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. We've got OPEC. We've got Saudi Arabia. We've got China. We've got Russia. Let's just you start wherever you want to start, man, because it's a potpourri today.
Boy, it is. There is so much going on. It's kind of interesting. I was telling some people the other day about how difficult it is to forecast oil prices. It seems like every time I come out with my report and I send it to the printer to get printed up, that within the next 2 or 3 weeks, something major happens. Like last year, I sent it in. And a month, you know, I have oil prices being around $80 a barrel. And then I send it to the printer. 2 months later, Russia invades Ukraine. And then this year, I just send it to the printer, just getting out of the speaking circuit. And suddenly, OPEC decides to take 2 million barrels off the market. So you just never know. Again, I think this is the second most difficult thing in the economy to forecast. And it is a strange world out there right now.
Historically, what happens when someone takes off 1 million or 2 million barrels?
Well, the key thing to remember is something you learned in your principles of economics class. There's so much people learn there that if they could just remember it, it'll help them figure out what's going on. And one of the things you learned was something about elasticity of demand. That basically what we'd say about oil is that the demand for oil is very inelastic. It's a very steep demand curve. And what that means is it doesn't take much of a change in supply to cause an outsized change in the price of oil. So if OPEC does take 2 million barrels of oil off the market, then you can expect the price of oil to pop up maybe from the 84 range that we had been experiencing to nearly $100 a barrel. So that can happen. Now, what's kind of interesting, Jason, is to figure out, is this really a 2 million barrel cut? Or is this a 2 million barrel cut in actual output, or is it a 2 million cut in their quotas that they've assigned to people? Most people read what they're saying is a 2 million cut in quotas. Well, if that's the case, it's not going to really be a 2 million cut in output. I know this is a little convoluted, but there are several of their member countries, especially those in Africa, that already are not meeting their quota. And there are other countries that are not meeting their quotas right now. And so what is going to happen if they say, we're going to cut our quotas by 2 million, probably the total cut in output will be like 1.2 or so. So it's going to be a smaller number, but it's still going to be enough to cause the price to change. I think most of those cuts will come from Saudis, the UAE, and Kuwait. The other people are already, I mean, they're already cut back. But we're going to see about a $1.2 million barrel cut in output.
You mentioned prices, you know, possibly could go up. On the flip side of it, we have a strategic petroleum reserve being, you know, being dipped into, being sold, however you want to, you know, phrase it. How does that, first of all, what is that going to do to the market? And secondly, what does that do to the supply going into the winter?
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, the whole idea of strategic petroleum reserve was to use it in case there's a really major emergency. Well, the reason it's being used right now is there is a major emergency looming out there, and it is the November elections. That's the emergency, because you would be stunned to see how much people vote depending on what the price is at the pump. And so one of the ways, that, you know, as a result of the Russia-Ukraine bump that went up, one of the ways that the president responded was by taking oil out of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Since last March, it's averaged about 860,000 barrels a day. So it's a lot. Matter of fact, he's driven the SPR down to about where it was in 1983. And what that means now is that in the face of the OPEC cuts now, he really doesn't have that tool to use. He really can't drive it down that much further, I don't think. There's just not enough of it there. There are rules how much you could take out. So it's not going to be a tool that he's going to be able to use very well going forward. So I think the result is that we're going to see some price bump, and we've already seen a bit of a price bump, and we haven't even got to the cut yet. I think they take place in November. So I don't know. It's I don't think the SPR is going to be a very useful tool going forward.
Couple things I wrote in my notes here: 1983 and the supply reserve. The first one is I've always been told that the United States really only has a day or two of energy storage on backup and maybe 30 days supply of petroleum. You know, what's going on with that? Expect, like I said, going into the wintertime, you know, Chicago last year, boy, they were on the brink of becoming California last year on the grid.
Well, I think their issue there is more natural gas, I think, than oil. I'm not that familiar, but they're more a natural gas issue. I mean, this is going to be an interesting winter, Jason, because when Russia invaded the Ukraine, this really messed up the market for energy, especially in Europe. Now, what your listeners have to understand is that Europe is probably the continent in the world that went whole hog into the green thing. They outlawed fracking. They want to keep fossil fuels in the ground, and they switched heavily to solar and to wind. Now they're getting ready, and what they were doing is they were having, because they outlawed fracking, they were having to rely on Russia for about 45% of their natural gas that they use. Well, now, of course, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline has been sabotaged. Before that, Putin was turning it on, turning it off. Saying it was for maintenance purposes, but in reality, he was just showing Europe, you start providing, support of any kind, political and or military, to the Ukraine, watch what we can do to you. And so what has happened is the price of natural gas in Europe this past September was $71 per million BTU, okay, because there was such a shortage of it over there. Compare that to $7 here in the United States. Well, I mean, so now we're going into the winter with a shortage of natural gas. And the Europeans are going to have to do one of two things. They're going to either have to let their people freeze, or they're going to take all the natural gas they can away from industry and use it to heat homes, which means you're going to have to shut down industry. And if you go to Ludwigshafen, the BASF plant in Ludwigshafen, Germany, there's 39,000 people employed at that. There's 200 plants in that one site. And they're talking about shutting that sucker down for the winter. You think 39,000 people are going to lose their jobs. So, and this is going to be a very cold winter. Remember, a lot of people think Europe's about on the line with Dallas or maybe Atlanta. Europe is on line with Toronto. They're even higher up than you guys are there in North Dakota. Mm-hmm. It's going to get cold there. And so, Jason, the key point here is that the Europeans are about to learn what happens when you go whole hog into renewables and you give up fossil fuels. And I think that the general public over there is going to say, what the hell have we been doing? This is stupid. We've got natural gas under us. Let's drill for the dadgum natural gas. We'd rather have that than freeze to death. Okay, so I think you're going to see a major shift in people's attitudes towards fossil fuels after this winter. because you're going to have people freezing in Europe. You're going to find industries going in the tank in Europe. And by the way, among those industries going in the tank are the ammonia fertilizer people. Okay, they make ammonia fertilizer out of natural gas in Europe. And there's going to be a lot of ammonia fertilizer that's not going to be produced in Europe this coming winter. And as a result, guess what else is going to happen? It's going to follow. You're going to have food famine issues, again, especially in Africa. But it's going to be all over the place. And so I just think this is going to end up being a disastrous winter for them. And it's going to spread all over the place. And suddenly, I think you're going to see a change of people's attitudes towards fossil fuels.
Nord Stream, you mentioned the the pipeline there. There was some saboteur happening. Fingers are being blamed. So, I mean, not only do you have the actual physical damage, but now you've got some geopolitical damage too. What's how's that impacting the market with the price and also with the futures?
Yeah, well, of course, the main thing it's impacting is the price of natural gas and the availability of natural gas. It's just compounding Europe's problem. It's solidifying Europe's problem going into this coming winter because there are a number of natural gas pipelines coming into Europe from Russia, but that was kind of the key one that was feeding Germany. And, of course, Germany is the industry powerhouse in the EU. And, now they're just really faced with shutting down a lot of industry. And so what people are, Will Rogers once said that there are three kinds of people in the world. There's the people who learn by reading. They're the people who learn by observation. And then some people just have to pee on the electric fence to learn. And I don't want to mess up your radio show, but basically what's going on here is Europe has been peeing on the electric fence, and they're going to find out they're going to learn the harsh lesson this coming winter. And I think it's maybe changing people's attitudes all across the globe when they see what happens when you go whole hog into renewables and say we're not going to do any more fossil fuels.
One of the other areas that I think the awareness and the education is going to come through is the supply chain and some of the inflation. If you go back and take a listen at Dr. Lauren Scott here on The Crude Life, we were tackling these supply chain issues long before the mainstream media, in fact, because it was a hurricane that was shutting down some of the refineries down there about a year ago that was, and then the Huntington Beach thing happened shortly after that. So the supply chain inflation issues were happening kind of, they were creeping up earlier than people thought. This is you mentioned food, and I wanted to bring up a couple areas because a lot of people don't understand the fossil fuel connection with food, whether it be, the tractors or the feedstock. But Canada came out and really, went all in against pesticides and some fertilizers and a number of different things. So the Canadian crop market is going to be impacted next year. The Ukraine had tens of millions of acres of wheat that were burned in the conflict happening over there. You mentioned the things happening over in Africa. I do think, number one, we're going to have some food shortage issues next year. Number two, though, I think this is going to be kind of an educational piece on the flip side of it as well. How do you read some of the supply chain issues, whether it be from the food side of things or from the oil and gas, getting things out to the market side?
Well, I think the key thing is that when you have a country like Canada or Sri Lanka, for example, that says, we're not going to use ammonia fertilizers anymore. We're not going to use pesticides anymore. Basically what they're doing is they're peeing on the electric fence. Okay, it only takes 1 year to learn your lesson on that, because the next year your crop output is so much lower that you got rising food prices, which will cost you politically beyond belief. And secondly, it just creates, it's really nice to go to a grocery store and see all those goods, canned goods, and all those fresh vegetables around when they're not there. I mean, that's really, really bad. And you experience that, like in Sri Lanka, they experienced that 1 year of food shortages, and they rioted, and they said, hell no, let's get the ammonia fertilizer back here. We need to grow food. So it's one of those things where it seems like it's really smart on the surface. Maybe initially it's a great thing, it's a green thing, but then when you have to deal with the reality, you say, oh shoot, this hurts. This is a bad plan. And so they will, unfortunately, on the food side, they learn that very quickly. That's not something that takes 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 years. You learn it straight away. And I think Canada and Sri Lanka has already learned it, and Europe is going to learn it too.
Economic outlook for Louisiana. Of course, there's a lot of annual meetings happening right now, whether it be in oil and gas or agriculture or universities. Talk about this economic outlook that came out, you published last week.
Well, as it turns out, if you look at a map of the United States, look at the 50 states, and look at how far the state has come in recovering from the shutdown due to COVID, you'll find that many of the states in the United States are either 100% back or very, very close to that. But in Louisiana, we're only 69% back, 68% back as of this past June. And that's the second worst performance in the country. And the primary reason for that is not because our economy generally sucks. It's because we've had five major natural disasters. We've had three major hurricanes, Winter Storm Uri, and a major flood in Lake Charles area. And so basically we're way down because, you know, when you have a natural disaster, your employment drops off like a beat, part of a V. You just go straight down. Well, we're in the process of coming up the other side of that V. It is kind of natural to recover, get those jobs back from a natural resource disaster. But ours were so heavy and so many that we've been very slow to get back. But right now, if you look across our state, generally speaking, the economy is very good. Down along the southern part of the state, this is where your LNG export terminals are coming in. Europe desperately needs natural gas, and one of the ways they're going to solve their problem is to import more of it through LNG. But we have a lot of LNG terminals down along the southern part of the state because there's access to a lot of natural gas, a lot of natural gas pipelines, and you have access to the Gulf of Mexico, which means you can ship it out and get it to the world markets. So we also, because the price of natural gas is 7 here versus 71 in Europe, BASF has to find another place to grow. Well, guess what they're going to do? They're going to chase the cheapest molecules. And those cheapest molecules are located in South Louisiana and Southeast Texas. So you're going to see a lot of chemical firms coming to the southern part of Texas and the southern part of Louisiana. And then we just have a number of other just good things that are unusual in each one of these pockets of the state that are causing it to do well. So I'm actually predicting that there will be a national recession in the first three quarters of 2023, but I think Louisiana's employment will grow right through it because we're recovering. We're coming up the other side of the V from these natural disasters, and also because there are just a lot of good energy-related things that are going on in the state.
Dr. Lauren Scott, hey, you got time for one more question?
Sure, yeah.
So, and you don't have to answer this, but you're somewhat familiar with it. Up here in North Dakota, as well as some of the surrounding states, the Chinese have been buying up land to use for agriculture reasons. And we've got some other states where I've been researching where for energy products and projects and a number of things like that. Down in Louisiana and Texas, you know, Saudi Arabia, I think they bought a refinery a couple of years ago. I know you've mentioned several times that some European countries have been active with the LNG market down there. How does all that fit into where the commodities market is going? You know, because if we're going to be growing crops in America and sending them, you know, having Chinese companies, you know, overseeing it or European companies or whatever the case is, does that change how we do things? Or I don't know, do you guys get into that down there? Do you care about foreign ownership, I guess?
Not really. I mean, because we have, you know, if you look at the chemical plants and the refineries down here, they are all over the place. And there's a lot of foreign ownership, foreign direct investment in Louisiana, because this is where there's access to a lot of energy. There's access to a lot of natural gas, access to a lot of crude oil. So we don't really worry about it. And I would encourage people out there not to be too concerned about this. I know you think, well, the Chinese are kind of taking over, but if things get really uncomfortable or looking bad, like this is turning into something bad, all the risk is with China. I mean, because all we have to do is nationalize the thing and kick them out. Just like, you know, when we were in Venezuela, in their oil field, they just nationalized and kicked us out. And so the risk is to the foreign investor. Because at any time, we don't do this in the United States, but at any time, we could simply take over their company, take their land away from them. So I don't worry about that so much. We have a lot of it here in Louisiana. It really hasn't affected our economy all that much.
Is that are the ports still going pretty good down there, Lake Charles? Is that activity still happening?
In the port?
In Lake Charles and down in that area, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Lake Charles is still, I mean, I said that the state is 68% recovered.
Yeah.
Lake Charles is only about 45% recovered.
Oh.
Because, again, Lake Charles had two major hurricanes, and they had Winter Storm Uri, and they had a big flood. They had four major hits to them since COVID. And so they're still coming up the other side of the bay. If you look at Lake Charles, Lake Charles is basic industries. It's manufacturing employment. All of its refineries and its LNG facilities and its chemical plants, they're back to where they were pre-COVID. Their problem has been in the construction side, the industrial construction side, which is about to turn around. They're about to have some major announcement. That's going to turn around. Their leisure and hospitality side is down, but they're getting ready to open up a brand new casino. That'll take care of that. They're getting ready to really pop up. We think they'll be the fastest growing area in the state because they're coming up the other side of their bay, and they're going to be coming up it pretty quickly.